Accession number 27065, Reel 6, Mr. James Blackburn. We got to the point where you'd taken up the initial gun positions, and you did. So what was life like for you then during this period? What do you remember of what you were doing and what happened to you?
Well, we just carried on as we always had done, really. We had had tiffin at dinner time and meal at night.
Well, can I ask about food, because they should have had the compo rations starting to come in.
Yes, we did,
What did you think of compo? Can you explain what they were for people who don't know?
Well, they all had different letters on. And the box to have, really, was a K, because it had steak and kidney pie, tins of steak and kidney pie. The others were mostly McConaughey, the old-fashioned stuff. So if you got a box, a K ration, as we used to call it, we were quite pleased. Because I think headquarters used to keep that for themselves a lot of the time.
Now, when you got your box, I mean, would your cook still cook it, or would you cook it
The cooks did it, yes. There was a cookout. There was a central point where we used to have our meals, yes, evening when we were in action.
Now, anything you remember from this? I know we're not going to go day by day, what are the things you remember?
There was one thing I remember was all these cows and whatnot wandering about, because all the farmhouses and when we got further inland, they'd all been obliterated, more or less, and the villages even. But there was one cow that had just given birth to a calf, and we managed to catch it and tie it up, and I milked it, and we got 3 or 4 gallons of milk. So we boiled that up, and every night somebody gave up their emergency rations of chocolate, and we had this hot chocolate drink throughout the troop. Really, there was enough milk for everybody, because the calf couldn't possibly get it. It was too much for it. It couldn't possibly suckle the cow. Anyway, we gave it some out of the bucket, but. I doubt whether it would survive, this particular car. Just a bit silly, really, but that was what we did.
Anything else happening? It's just things you might remember, that stand out.
It was, of course, they were all. What struck me about it was how rich the soil was. The clover there was head high. I remember coming across an old woman with one cow, and it looked as though she lived with this cow. That was her, her living, more or less. And it was tethered, and it had eaten a circle in this clover. But the clover was, I've never seen anything like it. The soil must be absolutely rich.
Far richer than you were used to in
England. Oh, yes, definitely, yes. That's what struck me. What wonderful farming country it was. But they're all high hedges. And we had to move about very, very carefully.
Why? Just in case of...
Well, you never knew, of course, really, where the Germans were. You couldn't see. There weren't any old peas like they had in the desert. And these... Yeah, it was difficult to. You never knew where the next attack was coming from. But at the beginning of July, they started building an airfield next to where we were. The bulldozers and everything levelling off the strip. And the Germans must have taken note of it. And we were shelled during the night, and there were several casualties.
Now, that's one of the first times you'd really been under shelled.
Yes, that's right.
What was it like for you? Because people don't know now, do they?
No. Well, it wasn't very pleasant. Of course, you could hear the guns fire, and then you wait for the shells arriving. And, of course, it wasn't very pleasant. I mean, it hit one of the trucks. Well, actually, I think it hit a tree that was over the truck. And, of course, all the shrapnel went through this truck, and people sleeping in it had no chance. So, we had several casualties. But fortunately, I was further along. I was sleeping in my truck. And
it woke you up, though.
It woke me up, yes.
Were you scared? I mean.
Oh, I was scared, yeah. No doubt about it. But anyway.
Had you dug in? I mean, had you dug yourself?
No, we weren't dug in, no. But at the end of the field where we were in was a great big pit. I don't know what it had been there for. And the following day, we got some, there were some logs around, some tree trunks, and we made a roof on top of this pit, and we slept in there after that, for the next week or so, while we were still in that position. Yeah. But one of the sergeants got his leg blown up, and we had a letter from him about 2 months later to say that he was in Harlow Wood Hospital. Yeah, of course, that's just outside Mansfield. I knew it well because my sister had been there. Mm.
So what happened next? And that's July.
Yeah. Yeah. We just kept moving position.
Is this it within the thing, before the breakout, or is this
after? Yes, this was before the breakout. We kept moving according to what happened, you know, the infantry advanced, and they came back again, and we had to move according to how they were getting on. But when we actually did break out, we came across some horrendous... I remember one particular place where there was a whole column of German the artillery, and they had horses as well. There were a lot of dead horses. They must have been pulling them with horses, and dead Germans everywhere. They must have been trapped and strapped, and it was pretty deadly.
That would be in the Falaise Gap, would it?
Yes, it was, yeah. Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And that's August. Yeah. Do you remember? Yeah. I mean, you were going forward pretty fast then for a...
Yes,
break.
We did move
remember?
Out
what,
then.
What was it like? What was happening?
Well, that was... we moved pretty rapidly after that. And I remember going across... It must have been the Seine. They built a Bailey Bridge across the Seine. And we drove across this, and it was... Oh, dear. 300 or 400 yards, it was incredible, really, to drive across this bridge. Of course, it went up and down as you went along.
A pontoon bridge?
Yeah. Well, it was, yeah, that's right.
No, because a Bailey's solid.
Yeah.
Pontoon.
Yeah.
Was it nerve-wracking? Because they do move up and down a lot, don't they?
No, pardon?
They move up and down a lot.
Oh, golly, yeah. But obviously, plenty of traffic had gone across it, so I wasn't really worried about it. Yeah.
And what happened next?
Well, then we had a briefing, actually. They called this meeting and it explained to us that there was this massive scheme on, because it was Market Garden, you know. But we did hear about it, which was unusual to be in the picture to that extent.
So what did they tell you? Do you remember at all?
Well, they told us that the airborne troops would be capturing vital bridges, and they were hoping to break into Germany. And perhaps, you know, the idea was that the war was going to be over very shortly when all this succeeded. But
and what was your unit's role going to be? Because I'm not sure 50th Div were involved that much, were they?
Yeah, well, we were following, we were supposed to be breaking through. We got as far as we got to Belgium, across the in action most of the time. We kept moving, perhaps 20, 30 miles a day, and we crossed the Albert Canal and the Escort Canal. And the, when we reached,
were you keeping up with fuel? I mean, you know, because during a faster transit, yes, France,
yes,
I mean,
we never had problems there. So far as I know, we seemed to be going more or less every day as far as we possibly could. We never seemed to have restrictions there. But we were the first troops into Brussels, and of course it was mayhem. We could not move.
What was it like? I mean, how did the civilians greet you?
There were hundreds and thousands of them. We could not. What's that? Well, they we were in a long column, driving through the centre of Brussels, or trying to get through Brussels, but we were absolutely jammed. People were climbing into the vehicle or onto the vehicle, wanted to shake our hands, and you know, it was something we'd not experienced before, and incredible, really. It made you realise, you know, what liberation meant to people. They were no longer beholden to the Germans. Glad to see the back of the German. Yeah.
So what happened then?
Well, we eventually got to a sort of open space, and we parked the guns there and got on a tram into the centre of Brussels and had a bit of a night out. And
were you still teetotal?
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say I was teetotal, but I didn't drink anything like some of them did. But it was rather funny coming back, because we couldn't remember where the actual place was where the guns were. And we were trying to ask one of the locals, and he was asking his friend, and he said, "These people have lost the cannons." That's what stuck in my mind, looking for these lost cannons. Anyway, we got there. And then we moved on into Holland.
Is this the Market Garden bit now?
Yes, we're part of the Second Army now. I mean, we're always in the Second Army.
Were you, because the division, 50th Div, was broken up in, was it October, I think, or was it November? I'm not quite sure, I can't remember now. But were you aware of the division being broken up? Because it was definitely broken up. Because
Not till March, I don't think.
Is that when you think it was? Mm. Right, okay.
Yeah. Mm. I think it was. There wasn't long before the end of the war.
Okay, well, what do you remember happening next? What, the Market Garden business, how much were you involved in it? Cause
well, we we got as far as Nijmegen. But when we actually went into Nijmegen, it was all over. I mean, that was the 2nd of October. I mean, the actual airborne landings was the 17th of September. But we saw them landing. We didn't realise at the time what a massive affair it was. We could see all these gliders going in ahead of us, and paratroops and everything in the distance. But it was just close. We got stuck. You know, we didn't move. We expected to go on to Arnhem, but we didn't. We only got as far as Nijmegen. And having got to Nijmegen in October, we were there till the following April.
You just stayed there?
Yeah.
And what, in the same gun positions? Or?
Well, no, we actually we were in gun positions out at a place called Elst for a while.
What were those gun positions like? Can you describe?
Well, it was very low-lying land, you know, and there was these dikes, these roads on top of sort of embankments. They call them dikes, but they're embankments. And we got stuck there, really. And in the end, we just came back into Nijmegen and set up camp in Nijmegen itself. We weren't actually in action. And of course I got to know one particular family and finished up more or less staying there, used to sleep there.
Were you going out with the girl of the family or was it...
No.
Just friends?
Just friends, yes.
How did you get on with them then, the Dutch? I mean...
Oh, very well, yes. Very well. They were very friendly people. It was, I've got into this family, and I mean, since the war, they've come over here, and we've been over there, and kept it up, and we're still in contact with them, yeah.
And did they tell you what it had been like, and, you know?
Oh, yes, yeah, pretty terrible. The elder, there were five in the family. Four boys and a girl, and the eldest boy had been recruited to work in the mines, in the Ruhr, and he'd managed to escape, and he just got back into Nijmegen as we arrived there. Yeah, he said his worst experience was when the RAF bombed the Ruhr.
Now, did they have enough food? I mean, or did you provide the food for them? You know, especially when you stayed with them.
When I first got there, they were very short of food. They were sort of half starving. But in fact, I used to bring, when we were down in Elst, there were several heaps of clamps of potatoes and whatnot. I used to rob some of them, bring a sack of potatoes back for them, all that sort of thing. But of course, things got a lot better after a while.
So you weren't doing much at Nijmegen for quite a while.
No, just maintaining the vehicles sort of marking time, really.
Were there any big problems with the vehicles, the quads? I mean, you know, you told me about them in the desert. What about in the mud of Holland?
No, they seemed to be pretty... They were very efficient in that respect.
Were they generally reliable?
Yes, they were. I found them so, anyway.
I mean, they didn't wear out. Were there any particular problems you'd noticed about them by this time?
I don't think so, no. They served the purpose they were built for very well, yeah.
So what happened next? What's the next thing you remember?
Well, we eventually had to cross... In April, I was on OP duty at the time.
Now tell us about OP duty, because you haven't told that. I mean, how come you're on
OP? Every now and again, I'm very detailed to go up with the OP, so you drive 1500 weight, take the OP parties up to where they were operating from, which was obviously close to the enemy.
Was that at Elst, or they moved somewhere else?
No, I think it was somewhere in Nijmegen, because they were keeping in contact all the time.
And what would you do on OP? Just drive them up there and then that was it?
Yes, I often used to cook the meals, you know, cook the breakfast and such like, get the rations ready. But this particular time we were going into Arnhem and we had one of these ducks. And we had to cross the Rhine, it's called the Maas and Waal, I think, there, But it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and we set off across the river in the pitch dark, and landed.
And what were you crossing in?
Well, it was an amphibious vehicle, a duck, I suppose it would be. And drove into Arnhem, and it was absolutely deserted. There was no, it had been evacuated with everybody, all the houses were empty.
And this is April 45?
Yeah, about the 12th of April. I know what date it was because we were there for about 2 days.
Hang on. Now, what was it like crossing that river in a duck? Because, you know, people...
Well, I didn't know quite what to expect, but it was a bit hair-raising. But anyway, we got across all right. There was no problem. When we got to Arnhem itself, as I say, it was all deserted. But we drove up, found a suitable house. There was some shelling, actually.
Now, this was an OP you were setting up, was it?
Yes, that's right. But the funny thing was, when we went in there, as I say, it was all deserted, and we felt that we were the first troops into Arnhem. And we spent 2 days there. But when we came out, the place, there were signposts, the Canadians had arrived, and there were signposts, you know, this way to the baths, this way to the goodness knows what, as though they'd been there ages and ages. There was nobody there when we first went, and 2 days, all that had been set up.
And what could you see from your OP? I mean, was there any sign of where the Germans were or what was happening?
No, well, no, not really. We just, they obviously, wherever the officers were, they had a better view than I had. But it was strange.
In what way? Just the desertedness or what
well,
was it?
Well, yes, the whole thing.
So what's the next
thing? Switching. Yeah.
So what's the next thing you remember happening? I mean, you're in this OP.
Well, obviously the Germans withdrew eventually. We did get some shelling. Some of the houses further down were hit.
Was there much shell fire or was it intermittent?
It wasn't a lot, no, it was intermittent. They were obviously retreating, the Germans, you see. And we got, eventually, they packed everything up and we came back out again.
And where did you go back to? Back to Nijmegen? Or?
Back to Nijmegen, yeah. And I know what date it was, because I got back to the troop and I said something about, has anything happened? And this chap said, well, not a lot. Roosevelt's died, you know, assuming I knew. So I knew what date it was. It would be the 13th of April when he died, or 12th.
So what happened next?
But as I say, when we came out of Arnhem, it was full of these Canadians and, you know, quite a busy place. We actually saw some soldiers with fixed bayonets going from door to door with a film camera watching, you know, our intrepid cameraman. Well, there was nobody there. It was all put on for the sake of the newsreel.
And you could see it was being faked.
Oh, yeah. They were, it was deserted. The place was deserted. But that was fair enough. I mean, they had to do that sort of thing, but they actually showed, when you get the idea that the cameraman's right up in the front line. I mean, they were nowhere near the front line. It was obvious that whatever was shown would look very good, but it wasn't actually true.
Anyway, now, what happened to you then? But you're still back in Nijmegen with the truck.
Yeah.
What happened then?
Well, then we moved into Germany.
What do you remember of the advance into Germany?
Well, not a lot, actually. We went to Dortmund. And
was there any resistance, or was it all pretty
all
over?
No, really. It was just about all over.
So you went to Dortmund?
Near Dortmund. And we were there for quite a while.
Was that where you were when the VE day came?
Yes. Yeah. Wait a minute. No, I don't think we were. No, I think we were still in Holland in VE day. Yes. So I've jumped the gun a bit.
Well, tell us about VE day then. Do you remember, were there any special celebrations?
Not really, no. No, we listened to the radio, listened to Churchill on the radio, and they played the national anthem. We all had to stand up, you know. And it was after that that we moved into Germany, that's right, yes. And from then on, we were just sort of troops of occupation.
And that was in the Dortmund? Was it actually in Dortmund or near?
Well, it was near Dortmund. It was a suburb of Dortmund.
And what were you actually doing?
Well, not a lot, really. I'd lost interest, really, by that time. You know, the war was over. And,
How did you get on with the German civilians?
Well, at first, of course, we weren't allowed to speak to them.
How did that work? I mean, did it actually work?
Well, not really. I mean, we did our best, but of course, when you get human beings together, it's very, very difficult to, especially women. I mean, the women were all coming around, and it was it just didn't work. It was one of Montgomery's ideas that they'd been so. Terrible, really, the Germans hadn't got to speak to them, but it was totally impractical, really.
Were you friendly with them? I mean, yourself?
No, I never had much to do with them, no.
Did you know what had happened to your brother? I mean, had you found out what had happened to
your brother? Oh, yes, well, he was in Poland, a prisoner of war camp there.
But he got out all right?
He got out all right, yeah.